Hello, this is Jay Barris of Sidley Austin with the Mutual Fund Minute. Naming a registered investment company will become a bit more challenging now that the Securities and Exchange Commission expanded the so-called names rule to capture more funds. The SEC estimates that when the names rule goes into effect, 3 out of 4 registered funds will be subject to the new requirements. Section 35D of the Investment Company Act prohibits registered funds from using names that the SEC finds are materially deceptive or misleading. For more than 20 years, funds have lived with Rule 35D1, the names rule, which requires funds with certain kinds of names to invest at least 80% of their assets in a way that's consistent with that name. The old names rule provided that this 80% investment policy applied only when a fund's name suggests a focus in a particular type of investment or investments in a particular industry, country, or geographic region, and to funds with names that suggest they pay tax-free income. With me today is Louisa Q, my friend and colleague in the Boston office of Sidley Austin, who will explain how the SEC expanded the names rule and what it means for funds, advisors, and fund directors. So, Louisa, what do we have here? What changes are there in the new names rule?
Thanks for having me on, Jay. So just to quickly step back a bit, as you mentioned, the current names rule applies when a fund's name suggests that it invests in a type of security, particular industry, or a particular geographic region, or invests in securities that pay tax-free dividends.
Well, what about terms like equity and fixed income and things like that?
So those would be terms that are currently captured by the names rule. Terms like healthcare and Japan, those would all, you know, fall into the within scope of the names rule. And funds with those terms have to adopt a policy to invest 80% of its assets in those type of securities. But under the current names rule, terms that suggest a type of strategy or policy are not captured. So you have terms like growth and value. Those would all be outside the scope of the names rule. The amended names rule does a few things here, and I'm just going to quickly touch on the main aspects here. Expands the scope of names that are covered. It addresses what a fund has to do when it temporarily departs from its 80% policy, and it dictates how funds value derivatives in their portfolios for purposes of the 80% policy.
Let's talk about how the SEC expanded the scope of the rule. In what way? How did they expand it?
Right. So the new names rule now includes terms that suggest a fund focuses on investments that have, or investments whose issuers have, particular characteristics.
What do they mean by particular characteristics? Is that a term of art?
So the SEC didn't define what particular characteristics meant in the release, but we understand the term to mean any feature, quality, or attribute. So it is a little uncertain.
Louisa, just give us some examples of what you mean by that.
Some examples that the SEC gave, and these are all non-exclusive examples, are terms like growth or value, terms that suggest the fund's investment decisions incorporate one or more ESG factors. So ESG terms like sustainable, green, or socially responsible, and terms that suggest a thematic investment focus.
What did the SEC, or did the SEC clarify what thematic investment focus is meant to capture?
The SEC did provide some examples, and they also suggested that these are terms that fall into a gray area because they can't be readily classified as a type of industry or a type of investment. So these would mean terms like, and these are examples that SEC gave in the release, terms like drones or metaverse, big data, millennial, Gen Z. And you can see how these terms could be difficult to classify. And what it's interesting is that by acknowledging this gray area, it seems like the SEC recognizes that there are certain terms that will require more analysis. But ultimately, the SEC made it clear when a fund's name suggests a thematic investment focus, it will be in scope of the new names rule.
Okay, so switching gears a little bit, the SEC appears to be taking a more flexible approach, if you will, without imposing strict borders. I guess that they were sensitive that if they imposed strict requirements, funds would be forced to switch to, say, generic names or longer, more complicated names.
That's right, Jay. And to make it a little bit even more confusing, the SEC also acknowledged that different funds and third-party data providers may use different definitions for the same term to best reflect a particular investment strategy.
All right. Well, give me an example, please.
Sure. So let's say there are two funds, and they both have growth in their names, and they each have portfolio managers that take different approaches to selecting investments with growth characteristics. if each fund's definition of growth is consistent with the plain English meaning or established industry use, and each fund invests 80% of its investments in accordance with its description of the term growth, both funds would comply with the NAMES rule. And you can see how this can give funds some flexibility to implement some nuanced and innovative strategies.
When would a fund not be subject to the 80% investment rule?
Basically, if a fund's name does not communicate a particular investment focus, then would not be subject to the new names rule.
Like what? Like the Barris Fund?
So there are a few broad categories of terms here that would be outside the scope of the rule, and these are all examples SEC gave. So terms like real return or balance would not be in scope of the rule, and that's because those are terms that describe a portfolio's overall characteristics. Terms like long, short, or hedge would also be outside the scope of the rule because they really describe a fund's approach to constructing its portfolio rather than a particular strategy. And terms such as global, international continue to remain outside the scope of the NAMES rule.
How do you determine whether a fund should include a particular investment in the 80% investment bucket? The SEC talks about what they call a meaningful nexus. What does that mean?
That's right. So the SEC said there has to be a meaningful nexus between an investment and the investment focus suggested by the name.
Give me some concrete examples.
Sure. So if a fund derives more than 50% of its revenue from a given industry, then you can say there's a sufficient nexus between this particular security and industry. And if a company is acknowledged leader in an industry, then a lower threshold might work too. But you can't simply say a sufficient nexus exists based on the frequency of particular terms appearing in an issuer's disclosures. There has to be a meaningful relationship between the investment and the 8% bucket.
The SEC also had something to say about index funds. Can you explain?
Right. So index funds have to adopt an 8% policy to invest in the named index's components. And in the adopting release, SEC confirmed that index funds do not otherwise have to adopt an 8% policy to invest in the terms in the named index. But like we discussed, SEC said there has to be a meaningful nexus between the index fund's name and the components of the named index. So funds should have policies and procedures in place to make sure that the index selected by the fund does not have a materially misleading or deceptive name.
What happens when a fund's investments dip below the 80% investment requirement?
So just like under the old names rule, a fund has to comply with its 80% policy under normal circumstances. And funds have the ability to determine what constitutes other circumstances. And this can include periods of unusual market fluctuations, index rebalancing, cash inflows or outflows, or when a fund takes temporary defensive positions, as a few examples.
Is it entirely up to the funds how long they stay out of compliance?
Not exactly. Funds that stray from the 80% investment policy have to return to compliance as soon as reasonably practical, with an outer limit of 90 days.
And when does that 90-day period start to run?
The 90-day clock runs from the date the fund identifies a departure from the 80% policy as part of its quarterly review, which we'll get into in a bit, or otherwise, or the date the fund actually first departs from the 80% policy intentionally in other than normal circumstances. And when a fund identifies a departure consistent with the current rules, the fund has to invest its portfolio in a way that will bring the fund back into compliance within the applicable time period.
So to be clear, when do you measure compliance with the 80% investment test?
So like before, you measure compliance at the time of investment. So funds don't have to monitor changes to the characteristics of its existing investments every day if they're not buying new securities. But funds have to reassess their portfolios every quarter. And taken together, this means that a fund must determine at the time of investment whether a portfolio asset falls within the 80% basket. And going forward, the fund has to measure the value of existing investments at the time of a new investment, but it wouldn't have to reassess the characteristics of each existing investment at that time.
Okay, well, let's talk about derivatives. They have the potential to cause some mischief in measuring compliance, as they always do. How does the name rule deal with derivatives and how it gets figured into the name?
Right, so the new names rule now requires funds to measure derivatives using the full notion of value and not the market value of each derivative. And the new rule makes some accommodation when a fund uses derivatives for hedging purposes. Also lets you deduct cash and short-term U.S. Treasury securities up to the notional amount of the fund's derivatives when measuring compliance.
The NAMES rule took a harder line on unlisted closed-end funds and BDCs, or business development companies. What did they do with those funds?
That's right, Jay. The SEC took a more restrictive approach with registered closed-end funds and BDCs that don't list their shares on a securities exchange and that are required to adopt an 80% policy. These funds generally can change the 80% policy only with the approval of the majority of outstanding securities of the fund. And that's because investors have fewer options to sell their shares if they don't agree with the investment policy change. And some exceptions apply here.
What else, Louisa, about the NAMES rule should we know about?
Well, I think it's important to remember that compliance with the NAMES rule is not a safe harbor. That means SEC can still find a fund violates Section 35D, even if the fund complies with the four corners of the NAMES rule, if it finds that the name is materially deceptive or misleading.
And finally, what about compliance dates? When do we have to come into compliance?
The NAMES rule, as amended, becomes effective on December 10th, 2023. Fund groups with more than $1 billion of assets have until December 10th, 2025 to comply. And fund groups less than $1 billion of assets have until June 10th, 2026 to comply. The SEC is also looking at whether it has to withdraw any previous no action letters or other guidance now that it has settled on the final rule.
Louisa, thanks so much for joining Mutual Fund Minute today. This is Jay Barris of Sidley Austin with the Mutual Fund Minute.